From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Back in the 20th century, the key to success at work was to specialize. At least that's what Dustin Hoffman's character Benjamin Braddock was advised in the 1967 movie The Graduate.
One word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Times have changed in this new century. Specialization is on the decline. Agility and a willingness to learn continuously are in. Mandatory. The ability to work in groups, to problem solve across multiple disciplines. That's what it takes today. Is that a good thing? This hour On Point, the 21st century workforce. Join us. Does this sound like your workplace? Are you being stretched to master more skills, broaden your repertoire? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. With me from Chicago is Jerry Useem. He is a contributing editor at The Atlantic and author of a piece in this month's magazine titled At Work, Expertise is Falling Out of Favor. Jerry, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So a lot of organizations are asking their employees to do a little bit more with a little bit less. But tell us about what your research, about what you found about this shift in the workforce in favor of the generalist.
Well, the vehicle I use to look at this question is actually a Navy ship, which I first heard about from a Michigan State professor named Zachary Hambrick. And he explained it to me that there's a ship, which I had not heard about at the time, where it's designed to operate with about one-fifth the crew of previous types of ships, which means there's been a huge – the sailors on board have to essentially do – each sailor has to do the job of five others, which means getting away from the Navy's history, traditional history of specialized occupations. You're a gunner's mate, a bosun's mate, a culinary specialist, and instead taking on many different roles. And this involved looking for an entirely, really different kind of sailor.
Right. So this is a hybrid sailor, right? This is a sailor, he's a jack of many trades, not a master of one. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And, you know, I really wanted to get on board this ship because to me, it seemed like the perfect microcosm of what I was hearing and experiencing myself in the economy, which is we're asked to do things. I mean, as a journalist, we're increasingly asked to take our own photos, do videos, do audio, do technical things that used to be done by three or four other people. People in other occupations were telling me the same thing. They're sort of especially as machines take over certain tasks within a job, we're then kind of have extra capacity that we're then asked to take over, fill the spaces that others, many other specialists used to.
And so how is this working for the Navy on this ship that you refer to in your piece, a ship that's operating with 40 sailors, which you said is a fifth of the number aboard a comparable sort of legacy ship in the Navy, a far cry from what, 300, 350 sailors aboard one of those destroyers from World War II, right? I mean, this is a brave new world. So how is it working?
I guess the quick answer is unclear. But to me, I got aboard it because the Navy has pushed this concept really, really far out very quickly. And so you could see what was working and what was not working, where there are challenges. And I think we'll know more in 10 or 20 years, you know, how this sort of multi-skilling thing will play out and what the ramifications for all of us are in terms of how we should be educated, what kind of investments we should make in our career. But first of all, on board, the whole training, the way they select sailors for the ship is different than how they select sailors for others. For other ships, it's really skills. Like,
okay,
you want your job might be putting out fires on helicopter pads, On this ship, it's more your ability to learn new skills quickly. Something called fluid intelligence, which is basically our ability to reason quickly, to learn quickly, and which is distinct from what they call crystallized intelligence in the field of psychology, which is crystallized intelligence you can think of as sort of the accumulated know-how and facts that we acquire over the course of our career, and it peaks somewhere in our 50s or so. Fluid intelligence peaks much earlier. And so this is a ship that is basically consists of people that are kind of highly adaptable generalists who can rapidly switch from one task to another.
So give us an example of that. What does that look like, practically speaking, on the ship?
So early in the morning, they're getting underway from San Diego Harbor, and there's three people on a big rope team. Now, traditionally, the people who handle the ropes on Navy ships, this is a highly specialized discipline in itself. You go to a specialized school to learn how to do this. Well, the three people on the rope, one was an information technician, one was a gunner's mate, and one was a cook. And as soon as this job is done, the cook, for instance, goes to the galley and starts preparing garlic bread. A few minutes later, I see someone on deck holding a pair of binoculars standing watch, and it turns out it's the same guy doing a third job. And I asked him what other jobs he has, too, and he was explaining it to me. And while he was explaining, you know, he was a fireman if a fire broke out. His radio crackled and said, you know, we need you to do something else on the ship. And he said he was off. So it looked like, you know, it kind of reminded me of almost like a small theater troupe where, you know, you have the same actor playing the prince's cousin and the friar and the apothecary, literally putting on different hats and stepping into different roles.
So it's an agility. It's a willingness to learn new things, to step out of your comfort zone, to be trained in a different area, right? How does this translate to the world outside the military?
Well, I think there's this tension that we've all got to resolve, which is, you know, how specialized should we be? I grew up with the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the question implies that there's one thing you're going to be, and it's that thing is going to be there when you grow up.
Not anymore.
The pace of technology is just changing things so fast that people, if they stay in the same occupations, they're doing tasks and things that they probably didn't even imagine when they first got into it.
A lot of listeners are enjoying this here. Andre wants to get in from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Andre. Welcome.
Hey there. How are you?
Good. Go ahead. You bet.
I was just really excited that you guys are talking about this. I myself am somebody I've always felt like a bad thing that I'm kind of a generalization type person.
Okay.
I had to like learn a specific skill. I went to school for biochem. I had to drop out because of finance. Learn how to cook because that was like the skill set that was available. I also speak three languages. I'm learning two more. I'm also learning data science and like coding and everything else that goes with it. I love business analyzation. And I'm 27. So, you know, I'm slowly trying to build all those skill sets, and I honestly have no idea what I'm going to do in my 30s or 40s, but hopefully this trend is good for me in a sense, right?
That's great, Andre. Thank you. So, Jerry, there you hear Andre, trained in one thing, doing many other things, and learning kind of along the way. Does this favor sort of a certain kind of person? Does this favor a certain age of a worker? Is this sort of more skewing toward a younger worker who's more comfortable sort of in that kind of environment?
It may indeed skew toward younger people who are more comfortable in that environment. And, you know, I think for some people, especially who've invested heavily in education or advanced degree, there's a feeling of I've made a huge investment in time, money, resources, and in acquiring skills. And now that's done and time comes. Now it's time to reap the rewards. Where someone like Andre seems like he is talking about sort of continually acquiring skills. And I think I was just talking to someone in the university world, and they were saying what they're finding increasingly is people who have a major in philosophy with a minor in data analytics or cooking or something, i.e. the major gives you kind of a generalist outlook, the ability to reason, not to learn how to learn. But then you also need a specific skill that you can, especially with the levels of student debt out there, can go right out and practice in the economy to start earning money.
Right, because there are still areas of focus where it's important to be specialized, right? You don't want your spinal surgery to be performed by, you know, a dermatologist or a veterinarian. I mean, you want, you don't want your criminal defense team to be headed up by a tax attorney, right? I mean, but the rules are clearly changing and the ground is shifting. And I guess what I hear you saying is specialization is no longer the coin of the realm.
In some areas, that I'd say is where it's heading. And the question is, to how many areas is it going to spread? Like you said, medicine. It seems unlikely that we're going to see a doctor become a jack of all trades anytime soon. But, you know, part of what got me interested in this is a lot of the sort of career advice out there right now comes from what you were saying at the beginning, the notion that you should put in your 10,000 hours to acquire mastery in a given thing. Angela Duckworth's Grit has been an enormously popular book, and I think it's a great book and a great argument. But the question is, there's this tension.
Yeah, the ground is shifting. I can feel it. We've got it. We're discussing the future of jobs with Jerry Youssim. He's a co-contributing editor at The Atlantic Magazine. He's worked on this piece called At Work, Expertise is Falling Out of Favor. And we'd love to have you join us, listeners. Are you a specialist? Have you morphed into a generalist? Have you been phased out? More about the future of the workforce, the 21st century. Callers, stick with me. We'll be with you after this break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing work and what it takes to get ahead in a job market driven by a changing workforce that includes technology as co-workers. You can join the conversation. Are you retooling to meet the new challenges out there? Are you dragging your heels? Do you prefer the old operating system? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. In March, the comedian John Oliver spoke with a group of kids for his program Last Week Tonight about what it will take to succeed in the future job market.
You can do a series of non-routine tasks that require social intelligence, complex critical thinking, and creative problem solving, okay?
Okay.
Okay, can you repeat that back to me? I want to do a series of non-routine tasks.
I want to do a series of non-routine tasks.
Tasks?
Tasks.
I feel like you're doing a British accent there, Zoe. That requires social intelligence.
That requires social intelligence.
Complex critical thinking.
What? Complex critical thinking.
And creative problem solving.
And creative problem solving.
Good. With me this hour from Chicago, Jerry Youssim. He's a contributing editor at The Atlantic and author of a new piece in this month's magazine titled At Work, Expertise is Falling Out of Favor. I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation now from Toronto, Erica Volini. She's a global human capital leader at the consulting company Deloitte. Erica, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane.
So is the value of true expertise in decline? Is the half-life of skills getting shorter? How do you see it?
Half-life of skills is absolutely getting shorter, but I don't think that means that expertise is completely falling out of favor. What I think it means is that we are seeing the emergence and the combination of expertise with breadth of capabilities. So you have to be both deep in the skills that you bring to the table, but you also have to have a broad set of capabilities, the ability to problem solve. You used the word agility earlier, the ability to think and bring a sense of curiosity to the job, because the reality is every job is going to change and is changing right now. And workers need to be prepared and have the capabilities to adapt to that new environment.
So what are the trends, Erica? I mean, 10 years from now, what are you seeing out there? What percentage of workers will be in these so-called hybrid jobs or super jobs?
So we see three types of jobs that are out there, right? There's the traditional job, which is a fixed job with a fixed set of tasks and activities that has a job description. And then when you become a manager, you have additional responsibilities that get placed on top of it. Then you have hybrid jobs, actually the fastest growing segment of jobs today, which are combining technical skills with what we call soft skills. And what we're seeing now is the emergence of a third category, that, as you referenced, that are called super jobs, which is not just about the combination of new skills, but the combination of responsibilities that would historically sit in two distinct jobs. So one of the best examples that I like to use is I was talking to a bank, and they called and they said, can you help us understand how we know what the skills of the future are going to be? And I said, sure, I can. But why do you need to know that? Is it for your own organization? They said, actually, it is. We have investment advisors. I said, yeah, that makes sense in a bank. And they said, yeah, as investment advisors, we have to help people determine their financial health in the future. But we don't feel that we can do that anymore if we can't also understand their career potential. Because jobs are going to change so much that we need to know, do they have the skills that are going to give them career longevity? Hmm. And so they see the emergence of the investment advisor and the traditional career advisor coming together into a brand new job that's an advisor for the future. That's a great example of a super job, which gives more flexibility for people to bring their expertise, but they also have to be able to flex to bring in different types of knowledge and skills.
And are you seeing workers easily being able to flex, move into that situation? Is that something you kind of have to learn?
It absolutely has to be learned, and it needs to be an investment. And I think that this is a big topic of conversation, not only for organizations, but it's a combination of the organization, government, and the communities. I mean, this is an area where everyone needs to be partnering together. You talked about education. The education system needs to be rethinking what are the courses that are going to be designed to help individuals to have this type of skill set. And I think there's a lot of work to be done. The good news is that organizations recognize this need because ultimately, if they don't have the talent who has this capability, they're not going to be able to survive in the economy moving forward.
So what does this mean, or what does this do for the older worker, for the slower learner maybe, for someone that has a learning difference, or for those who may be less sort of socially adept?
You know, I don't think that there's necessarily going to be a difference between older workers and younger workers. I think that it just comes down to a need to get comfortable with ambiguity, with constant change, and with some core skills and core capabilities, like the ability to problem solve, the ability to see problems from a different angle, to adapt. And frankly, I think what's going to be really interesting, because I'm going to see the positive side of this a little bit, is it may give a chance for someone who's in a job that feels very narrow to all of a sudden some of their capabilities now allow them to progress into broader responsibilities, broader jobs. And so I think to me there's an opportunity here for workers to think about, how do I use some capabilities to help get myself promoted or move throughout the organization, and how do organizations build the infrastructure to allow for that mobility?
So interesting. Let's get Owen in here from Wisconsin. Hi, Owen. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So as a young beginning dairy farmer, I'm faced with a plethora of different tasks daily. And there is some task specialization, but a lot of that is incorporated into a lot of broad spectrum type of learning and use of many different types of skills in order to get a job done. But the thing that I really want to emphasize is the importance of education, because without the ability to reach out and ask for a individual to help you figure out and problem solve in a realm that you might not be used to dealing with, you need to be able to ask for outside help. And you also need to be able to always evolve your ability to communicate with employees and have employees communicate back to you. That is so important. And that's the human resource challenge is one of the biggest problems that every business is going to be faced with unless they're a sole proprietorship with only one employee and that's the owner. So we need to really emphasize the fact that everybody is going to gain help from broadening their horizons and being able to look at things in a different way daily. I think that's going to create a lot healthier work environment for everyone.
Got it, Owen. Thank you very much from Wisconsin. I appreciate it. Good points there. Brian in Albuquerque, New Mexico, you're on next. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, I just had a comment about basically, I don't think the workforce is incentivized to hire skilled workers anymore. It's a more favored generalist. So if it's the case that a particular business or industry wants to have less workers, it sort of forces the workers they have to be more generalist. And it also forces, or it also allows the business or the industry to spend less money because instead of hiring people who have specialized degrees or specialized skill sets, they're forcing either new employees or current employees to do these things, but they don't have necessarily the qualifications or the credentials that would bring a higher pay or a higher, you know, salary or job title. So I think it's definitely the case that the workforce is moving towards generalization, and I think that it only benefits the employers and not the employees.
Ah, Brian, thank you. Erica, would you agree with that?
You know, I don't agree, and it's partly because of where we are in the economy right now in the U.S. I mean, the latest JOLTS report tells us we have less than one unemployed person per job opening. This is a workers' market. And what organizations need to understand, and this has been the topic of our 2019 Human Capital Trends report, is that organizations have to invest in providing workers meaning in what they're doing, because that's what's going to not only make them loyal to the organization, but it actually ties directly to productivity. And so organizations can't just pay people less, ask them to do more, because one, workers have more options to be able to go to other jobs given the job market right now. And two, it will impact how they feel about their job and ultimately the productivity that they bring to their job, which will impact the bottom line. And so the wake-up call that we're trying to deliver to organizations is that the ability to bring meaning into work, which means giving workers a true sense of belonging, valuing and showing them how you value what they bring to the table, and then investing in their future potential, that is what we believe the organizational mandate of our time. And the organizations that do that well are going to show better returns to their shareholders in the long term. And, you know, it may seem like not every organization is understanding that right now, but we really do believe and have seen a trend underfoot of organizations embracing this concept and bringing it to the table.
I want to play this clip. IBM CEO Ginni Rometty saying that one of the most pressing issues to this point facing society is a skills gap that is leaving a lot of workers behind. She explained at a Fortune media conference last month that a particular kind of candidate IBM is currently pursuing to boost its productivity.
We hire lots of PhDs, university graduates, but I need more workforce. And we had coined this idea, and I keep using the words, I'd like to try it on you, called new collar. The idea was if you could believe in a different paradigm, not white collar, not blue collar, so nothing negative about this, but that you could make a really good living, a career, you did not have to have a four-year degree, so I would value your skills over your degree. I would value your skills. I would also believe that there could be new models of education that could get you there in different pathways.
That's so interesting. Jerry, you seem valuing your skills over your degree, a new collar, not a white collar or a blue collar. Did you see that in your research?
Yes. You know, IBM's been really out in front on this kind of thing, and they have a whole system now. Their system of career counseling, an employee can talk to basically a chatbot called Micah and say, hey, Micah, how do I get a promotion? And I guess Micah's, you know, basically a form of AI, Micah is not sort of dumb enough to try to predict the future. Micah just sort of notices other people like you earn these credentials, like recently. They learned these new skills and they got promoted. Maybe that would behoove you too to do that as well. But I also like to touch back on something that Owen said as a dairy farmer, and he was talking about the willingness and the ability to ask people for help. And that is something that really shone through on board this Navy ship I was on, that consistently I heard from people. I said, how do you do this? How do you work in a field that's so far out of your traditional field of training? And over again, I heard basically sort of a humility to ask the right questions, knowing who to ask and be able to reach out and basically admit you don't have all the answers, which is not fashionable in all work. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we're supposed to look like we know everything. Mm-hmm. So I think it might require a new kind of humility and asking people, knowing what you don't know.
It's really interesting. Robert in Rutland, Vermont. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I was going to say, in noticing and listening to all this, in the areas, let's say, of expertise, the experience and the qualifications, without those, it can be a recipe for disaster. I mean, especially in the area of safety. I mean, if you're working, let's say, in an oil refinery, and you don't have the skills at that given point, and so a crisis comes up, you're going to do something that might lead to next day in the newspaper, an explosion and a fire. So.
Yeah, it's a good point, Robert. Thank you. I mean, Jerry, you don't want your Navy destroyers sinking because you don't have you've got a bunch of jack of all trade workers and not a master of one, not the specialized worker who can actually save your ship.
Well, and this is an excellent point he brings up. There was actually a British report that looked at what they called multi-skilling generalists, and it looked at several disasters, including actually a refinery disaster where people who had they were relying on fewer people to do more tasks, and basically resulted in a worsening of the fire because actually it wasn't even wasn't clear who was supervising, who was the traditional boundaries between supervisor and doer had broken down, and so there was no one sort of able to stand back and say, "Hey, we shouldn't be doing this." And it also just came back down to a lack of expertise. So that said, the report finished by saying it may not be an inherent problem. It may just be that we're at this liminal moment where there's a new way of working emerging and we've got to find ways to fill those gaps. And we haven't thought of those yet.
Let me get Deborah in here before the break. Hi, Deborah from Tampa, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I am so happy about the fact that communication skills are not secondary anymore, but they're up in front of job skills, because I traveled all over the world for close to 30 years, in and out of many embassies on many continents, and communication skills, fast-changing communication skills, being able to adapt to specifics, all topics, things that are fast moving and changing constantly, and being able to roll with that and being able to communicate has made a fine resume for me. And I am so happy because I found that very useful in the world. And to hear this program advertising that these communication skills are very important now, and they are, in that regard, and analyzing and being able to think quick on your feet, but being very authentic, very factual, very accurate with your communication in all aspects of where you are and whatever the topic or business or politics are, whatever that entails, is very important, and I'm so happy to hear.
Oh, good. Deborah, thank you so much for the call. Erica Volini, do you see generally companies, businesses, asking workers or telling workers that this is what they need? Are they communicating this need, this cross-utilization for their workers? Are you seeing that in the companies that you work with?
Absolutely. We're seeing the broadening of skills. We're seeing them get valued more. We're seeing a lot of investments in learning. In fact, in our 2019 trends report, learning was the number one trend. So we're seeing massive investments in that space.
We are discussing the changing nature of work and looking out over the horizon 10, even 20 years from now. You can join the conversation. Has your job description changed? Have your coworkers changed? Employers, what are you looking for? More after this break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing the changing face of work in the 21st century this hour, and you can join the conversation. Teachers, what are you hearing here? How can we train our kids to meet this new challenge in the workplace? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Billionaire investor and owner of the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban, is not as pessimistic as many on the utility of a liberal arts degree to succeed in the modern economy. Here's what he told Bloomberg Television's Corey Johnson in 2017.
When the data is all being spit out for you, options are being spit out for you, you need a different perspective in order to have a different view of the data. And so having someone who's more of a freer thinker and, you know, because if automation is being automated, you just learn the tax rules. You just feed
right.
The automation the tax rules, and it does the rest for you.
So English majors of the world should celebrate?
I think English, philosophy, foreign language majors.
With me this hour, Jerry Useem, contributing editor at The Atlantic and author of a great piece in this month's magazine titled At Work, Expertise is Falling Out of Favor. Also with us, Erica Volini. She's a global human capital leader at the consulting company Deloitte. And joining me now from Mountain View, California, is Laszlo Bock. He is the co-founder and CEO of Humu, an organization that helps companies use behavioral science and machine learning to optimize performance at work. He was senior vice president of people operations at Google. Laszlo, welcome to On Point.
Jane, thanks for having me.
So vice president of people operations, that's a human resource guy. Is that what you are, really?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. A little more math and science than usual, but yeah.
All right, great. Well, great to have you with us. What are you hearing in this conversation, specialists versus generalists? How did that play out at Google?
Well, there's two things. One is that the Google bias was always to hire smart generalists. The idea was if you hire people who have a specific job skill, 90% of the time, they're going to do fine. If you are somebody who can learn, who's adaptable, who's part of an adaptive culture, and who has kind of more of a liberal arts kind of background that the quote you just played was about, they're also going to figure out the right answer most of the time. But 5 to 10% of the time, they're going to figure out something that the world has never seen and create something innovative. So the idea of hiring generalists with adaptable skills was core to Google's success while I was there, at least.
So in the tech world, how does this principle apply more broadly? Are there differences?
Well, there are absolutely differences. What I've since learned is that it's important to have a portfolio approach. So there's definitely jobs that need deep technical expertise, right? You don't want somebody who just graduated college filing your taxes, for example. You actually need some expertise there. But more generally, building a workforce that's adaptable, that's curious, and lives within a culture where people find meaning and empowerment and trust, many of the themes your guests have been talking about, is actually central to growing a successful company and building a robust culture.
Let me take a call in here. Bruce from Wilmington, North Carolina is with us. Bruce, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to throw in a different perspective real quick, more on the people side. I'm in my third decade in law enforcement, and I have noticed as a law enforcement trainer over the years that we have gathered more skills in crisis intervention and mental health and mentoring and quite a few other people's skills. And that officer or that person wanting to join law enforcement these days really needs to have that generalistic attitude coming into it, because it's not necessarily just enforcement of the law anymore. And that's my comment, and I'll go off air for anything else.
If I could comment, I agree with Bruce's comment. And I think this is applying across industries. So we uncovered a great example at Cleveland Clinic where, they had doctors who were performing very specialized roles in medicine, obviously incredibly important. But when they looked at what they were doing on a day-to-day basis, they realized that they were actually spending a lot of time in patient care. And those broad skills on how to serve patients, how to communicate with patients, how to understand their broad issues, in addition to their specialist roles in medicine, become important. And I think that is the message here. I don't really think it's a choice between specialist or generalist. I think it's a question of how do you bring a broad set of skills and capabilities to run alongside expertise so that people have the ability to pivot in their roles and, to Bruce's point, be able to bring the other aspects of the job to the forefront, because things like communication, creating an experience with whether it's your patient or your customer or your employee, those are capabilities that cut across multiple jobs. And that's where we're going to see the emergence of super jobs, these broader jobs, and frankly, greater mobility and greater opportunity for individuals who possess these skills. Mm.
Laszlo Bloch, would you add to that?
Yeah, I think there's a workforce and an education piece. On the workforce side, to Erica's point, one of the things that's challenging is figuring out exactly what skills to develop when. And I don't just mean job practical skills, but I mean the social and emotional skills, like how to be a better peer and collaborator and team member, how to best support the people around you. What we've seen at Humu is that if you actually drive the skill development around those specific areas that are most in need at the team level, you can actually drive business productivity by 10 to 15% and have a really profound impact on belonging and the experience people actually have going to work and how connected they feel to meeting. But even earlier, the Seattle Social Development Program trained teachers to work with students from first to sixth grade on developing these skills, typically called soft skills, like conflict resolution, communication. And what they found was not only did grades go up slightly, not only did conduct improve, so students had lower grade repetition, dropped out at lower rates, but they also found students were 10% more likely to finish high school, 12% more likely to get college degrees. And this was from a program that just ran when these kids were between the ages of 5 and 10 years old. So you can have a really profound long-term impact on human beings and their careers and their education by instilling these right generalist skills that apply across job types, across professions.
That is so interesting. Erica Volini, add to that. What should we be teaching our kids? What do you say to educators about this concept and how we prepare our kids?
Absolutely. First of all, it has to start, and I completely agree with Laszlo, it has to start early on. I think we talk a lot about higher education. We need to be talking about K through 12. We're bringing these skills in, but it's back almost to the basics. It's communication. It's problem solving. It's the ability to work with different types of individuals, especially as we see more inclusion coming into organizations, as we start to work more across geographical boundaries, the ability to relate to different cultures, different personalities. That becomes incredibly important as you progress, managing in a virtual type of environment. As we see the emergence of gig workers and the alternative workforce, you're not directing people who report to you. Now you have to exert influence. That becomes an incredibly important skill. Mm. And all of these skills combined are going to be the new essential human skills for the future. And organizations need to invest in developing them, but the individuals also have a role to play in finding ways to develop those skills within whatever job they're working in today. Even as I reflect on my own career, I've learned many of those skills even when I was doing work unrelated to my specific expertise, but it's helped me to be better in my job and gain opportunities along the way.
Jerry,
I think that's a part of the message.
No, it's great, Erica. Thank you. Jerry, you seem to jump back in here. How do you see technology and social media and young kids today? They're so distractible, they're doing 16 things at once. How does that play into what they're learning about what they'll need to produce in the workforce?
Well, that's a great question. And actually, I have a question for Laszlo, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you're saying that some of these skills that Erica's been talking about, soft skills, agility, ability to kind of switch between different contexts rapidly, that they are, in fact, learnable. Because a lot of the psychology literature talks about these as more sort of innate fixed traits. Are you saying that you're finding that they're actually, these are more teachable traits?
Laszlo?
It's a great question. And of course, there's great research from Carol Dweck on growth mindset and so on that suggests a lot of skills that we typically don't think are teachable are in fact teachable. So the evidence is that, yeah, in fact, a lot of these skills can be developed. The key is to think about them not as fixed innate attributes, but rather really outcomes of your conditioning, your training, what you bring to something, and the environment around you. So the way to unlock them is often not, I'm going to send somebody to a team workshop for 3 days, because then you go leave that team workshop, come back to your job, and nothing has changed, so you're going to be the same person you were before the workshop. The trick instead to really unlock them is to create cultures where people can learn and develop and pivot. And what that means is driving the things actually you were talking about earlier in the call, more meaning in work, more trust in environments, more empowerment. And the best way to do that is actually to start very small scale, not top-down massive change initiatives, but to figure out for each group, what's the biggest thing this team of four or five or six people, this group on the workshop floor, this project team should be focusing on? What does that team need the most? And solving it at that level. And part of the reason there's been such a gap in this research is because it's really hard to study teams. And you have to do that longitudinally over time. But that's the right place to start. And there's very clear ways to instill that right adaptive culture, which then, in turn, unlocks all this growth and human potential.
That's great. Let's get Eduardo in here from Miami, Florida. Hi, Eduardo. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Well, thank you for the opportunity. I'm a physician. I'm a practicing surgeon in Miami. But I also started a high-tech company in medical devices. And I've hired engineers and a number of them graduates from American schools, and there's just a substantial amount of lacking education, especially technical skills. I think we need to follow the German model of technical education. For instance, someone who becomes a carpenter in Germany or Switzerland will spend 7 years training the trade, knowing all the things that are associated with with the different materials they work with. And we don't have anything like that here. We don't produce quality stuff. We are not thought of as a manufacturing country. We certainly not thought of our manufacturing country of quality. And that might be in a number of fields, including machining. All my machining has to be done in Germany. Mm-hmm. We don't have companies that can qualify or can produce. And so we are deceived by thinking that communication is the way of the future.
Got it. Eduardo, thank you for that perspective in Miami. I want to go to Fort Lauderdale now. Morgan is on the line. Hi, Morgan. How do you see this? Generalists, specialists, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. So I was a very specialist, very narrow in my educational field as far as my master's and my graduate degree in marine biology. So I sort of was in this tiny little niche and then scored a job being more of a generalist. Now, I'm an environmental educator. That was what I was hired to do. But as the position had grown, I was pushed to be the media and communications person. I was their marketing and online social media marketer. I ended up being their outreach coordinator and their facilitator for dune restoration events. So
doing
it ended
it all.
Up turning
yeah.
into
yeah.
yeah, doing it all. I really want to speak to that comment that was jack-of-all-trades.
Uh-huh.
So that's very much an incomplete quote, right? So
yeah.
It's the jack-of-all-trades and is a master of one, but often better than a master of one. So in theory, you know, when you're looking at being hired by somebody, I was very narrow in my field of research in coral reef restoration and marine debris. But now, you know, being the generalist where I can talk anything on environmental issues with the kids that I teach, where I'm trying to teach them, like, listen, critical thinking skills is at the top. Like when we think of the comment of, you know, common sense, it's really not a common sense anymore.
Yeah.
Right. The critical thinking skills of you being able to deduce, you know, different problem solving skills with the variables and the data that you have in front of you it's not really a skill that people are teaching anymore.
And we're trying to change that. Morgan, thank you. Thank you so much. Erica, would you reply to that comment?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We need to teach these skills. We still need to teach them in the context, though, of expertise. It's interesting, and I know, you know, Jerry's article argues something slightly different. I don't think expertise in of itself is falling out of favor. To the point of the caller earlier, right? We still need expertise. We still need people who know how to be a carpenter, be a plumber, be, you know, a doctor, be a lawyer. We need people with those skills. I think it's how do you combine that with other skills and other responsibilities to take a broader view? And frankly, we haven't talked about technology, but technology plays a huge role here. What we have to understand is that in every single job, whether it's AI or cognitive or robotics, there are tasks that are being automated. It's creating capacity, and Jerry talked about it earlier. The question is, what are you doing with that capacity that's created, right? Because that's an asset. And what you can do is you can use that capacity to see the unforeseen problems that are happening in society, in the organizations, and work to solve those issues. That's the future of what workers are going to be able to do. That's what's going to give them true meaning in work. But in order to do that, workers need that critical problem solving, the ability to think through issues, to analyze data. And that's why those skills become so incredibly important. Mm-hmm. So technology plays a huge role here, but we can't look at technology as it's going to replace everyone's job. It's going to replace tasks that create capacity for more productivity and more meaning at work.
Laszlo Bloch, about a minute left here. I'll give you the last word. How do you see automation playing into all this?
Well, I agree with a lot of what Erica said. I think there was a McKinsey study out recently that talked about how there's a relatively small number of jobs that are actually going to be eliminated, but a huge swath of jobs where there's going to actually be a change in the way work has to happen. So, for example, in the legal profession, you see a lot of document search, research, primary things that used to be done by hundreds and hundreds of lawyers, even at a place like Google, that are now outsourced or done by machines. So the trick is to think about it in terms of what foundational skills do you need that will give you a job 10 years and 20 years from now, even though we don't know what those jobs will be. And those foundational skills are the ones around partnership and collaboration and how to, as a leader and manager, build cultures that instill all those things. On top of that, you can stack the job-specific skills. But even in the manual trades, you know, Mike Rose wrote a great book years ago called The Mind at Work, Valuing the Intelligence of the American Worker. Being a beautician, being a plumber, there's a tremendous amount of intelligence in those kinds of jobs that is unlocked as people learn to communicate better, partner with one another. So that's the real key to thinking about automation. It's going to touch just about every single job. And the most human thing we can do that's also going to be the best thing professionally for us is to go back to these underlying skills that make us human, listening and building rapport and partnership and collaboration.
So many different and interesting aspects to this. A great panel today. Laszlo Bloch, CEO and co-founder of Humu. Thanks so much for your time, Laszlo, from California.
A pleasure to join you. Thank you.
Thank you. Erica Volini, head of human capital at Deloitte. Great to have your perspective, Erica. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jerry Useem, contributor editor at The Atlantic, for starting us off on this great piece. Jerry, thank you so much.
Thanks. Great discussion.
You can continue the conversation. Listeners, get the On Point podcast at our website, On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.